You are listening to The Business Wilderness, the voice of entrepreneurs.
Welcome to The Business Wilderness. My name is Amra Hooley, and today I have a very special guest with me, Mr. Vitaly Golem, Managing Partner of GS Capital. Vitaly, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on the show.
It's an absolute pleasure. Vitaly, let's go back in time. Where did it all begin for you?
Well, I was very fortunate that my parents brought me from Odessa, Ukraine to Bay Area when I was 8 years old. Grew up in Cupertino. Went to the same high school as Steve Jobs in Wozniak and really grew up in the center of the universe for tech entrepreneurship. Wow. And really didn't look back. So I started out as an intern when I was about 13 years old or so. By the time I was 18, I was a freshman in college and working full-time in a dot-com, running a department, one of the early employees. We grew very fast. I learned lots and witnessed the dot-com bubble burst and all the pain and lack of traffic in Bay Area after that, and have since started three companies in various different places, ran corporate venture at Hewlett Packard. Now on the investment banking side, doing M&A and a lot of international financings for kind of grown-up startups coming from Europe and Israel and Southeast Asia into Silicon Valley.
Wow, awesome. And just for those that don't understand the lingo, M&A, mergers and acquisitions.
Mergers and acquisitions, yeah. I mean, most companies don't make it all the way. They don't go IPO, they don't go public. There are probably, I don't know, 100 times more companies that sell before that to somebody bigger. So a lot of times, just like you have lawyers, you have bankers that help you with the whole process, and it's a lot of fun. It's very interesting, very technical, both on the finance side and dealing with the different technologies and great founders.
Awesome. So taking back to the early days, you said you've been involved in a few startups yourself. The Bay Area was ripe. There was startups coming up left, right, and center. All the biggest companies in the world that basically come from around that area. What was it like during that time? I mean, was it hard to sort of raise money? Was it easy to raise money? What were people going? What extent were people going to raise money to really boost their startups, to put their startups on the map, so on? So like just the general feel.
Sure. I mean, by the time I got involved and was old enough to start participating in the late 90s, Silicon Valley has been around in what it is, kind of the center of innovation since after World War II, since the 50s. There's a long, long history, and there are a lot of things that happened with venture capital 20 years before Apple and Microsoft and all the, you know, first generation software companies, hardware companies that we know today came about. So by the time I came along, you know, this was a well-exercised muscle in this area. You know, Bay Area is about 7.5 million people, about a quarter work directly in technology. It's definitely accelerated the last decade or so. It's kind of become like LA for actors and New York for finance in a traditional sense. You have a lot of people that come to find their riches, right? So it's a gold rush mentality. But it is the Olympics these days. You know, the best of the best in the world come here to compete. Investors tend to be a lot more experienced, very smart money, so to say, that has built companies before and knows what to look for and has a very good truffle nose. And it's very difficult to raise money, but it's also the place to really find yourself and actualize your dreams if you feel like you want to compete at the world-class level. That's not to take away from a lot of opportunities all over the world for more local solutions. So, for example, e-commerce or infrastructure, things like that. There are a lot of opportunities in a lot of different markets in every country. But if you are looking to be a leader in a particular technology that's applicable to the whole world, you're much more likely to find those companies at some point, at least, coming to Silicon Valley. I didn't mention, you know, in the quick intro there, I wrote a book called Accelerated Startup. And what I started with in the book, in the first couple of chapters, is kind of zooming out to zoom back in. You know, first of all, what's innovation? Why is it important to civilization, to humanity? You know, from the earliest tools and how humans developed, and then kind of bring that to the world today. And then the second chapter is about the history of Silicon Valley and how since a little after World War II, driven by Stanford and everything happening here, how these apple orchards were turned into tech parks with software and hardware and semiconductor companies growing over the course of decades.
Wow. Amazing insight. I've never heard that before, actually. Vitaly, like we've seen over the years, we've seen this layer that's been built on the internet, your Facebooks, your Amazons, your Googles, so on and so on, right? So pretty much a lot of the areas have been covered, all the industries have been covered. Now, what's the future from here? Like, what can you guys see? What are you guys seeing a lot of nowadays, people trying to do, coming to you guys for funding? What kind of projects or startups are you guys seeing?
Well, let me give your listeners some tools to be able to decide what they want to work on.
Yep.
The same way that investors will think about thinking about these mega trends and where the world is going to be. So it takes about 10 years at this point for a company, for an average company that eventually goes public, to go through the paces, right, from seed stage through all the different rounds of financing and then finally IPO, if they don't get acquired before that. So that means that venture capital is about 10 years ahead of the public markets as far as what's out there. And if you take a look at the history of funding, you can see things bubble up and increasingly larger round across the three categories. So one of the hottest spaces right now, for example, is kind of the transformation in transportation. And this is electrification, this is autonomy, this is mass transportation. You're going to see a lot of changes there. That's probably one of the hottest markets, and you can tell because you can see a lot of companies raising very, very large rounds of financing by any standard. You know, hundreds of millions of dollars per funding round, where before, to access that kind of capital, even 20 years ago, the company would have to go public. You know, eBay or even Google went public, and they raised a couple hundred million dollars. They didn't raise that as a private company, where we see companies raising billions even at this point. So that's one thing.
Vitaly?
I think you lost it for a second there. Sorry. Yeah. Transformation of healthcare is another area that I would say is key. And that means that we're seeing, you know, in the U.S., healthcare is a $3.5 trillion industry.
Wow.
So certainly there's a lot of interest goes into that. I mean, a lot of it, the size of it, is because it's really broken, but nonetheless, it's not going to get fixed overnight. So you see things happening from beginning to end, right? From setting appointments and insurance billing all the way through the surgical theater. Finance, fintech, and blockchain as part of that are big areas that are changing as well. And you're going to see a lot of different things happen there. You know, companies like TransferWise came out of nowhere, seemingly just a few years, to become big players. So you can see a lot of these different categories start to show themselves. And by the time consumers notice this big trend, that means that investors and smart entrepreneurs have been investing in that area for a number of years, because it takes several years to build a company, to build anything. Now, if you look at any particular kind of what's called S-curve, technology S-curve, for a long time, there's a lot of money and time that goes into building some kind of technology. And at a certain point, it graduates out of research into commercialization. So at that point, you have a window, maybe a few years, where somebody can go from raising a little bit of capital to building a future enterprise, right? So look at any company. So, you know, sharing economy was kind of a moment in time where Uber and Airbnb became multi-billion dollar companies very, very quickly, from an idea to a multiple, you know, 10 billion valuation in 5 years or less. So what we try to look for is technology that's getting mature enough to create these new opportunities where it can collapse markets, meaning it can do something 10 times faster, 10 times cheaper, or create a whole new opportunity, a whole new capability. And then you use that technology leverage to build a solution to a particular problem, right? In a new way, in a better way, that's better than before. And that's really what disruption is. So from a venture perspective, from a startup perspective, that's really what investors are looking for these disruptive technologies that will change markets rather quickly, or create new opportunities, create new possibilities. And so if you're thinking of, you know, quitting your job or you're in college and you want to go the startup route versus the corporate route, and you have this idea that's bothering you, you know, think about it. Well, first of all, my recommendation is, you know, your first startup should not be your own. You should go into a startup, fast-growing company, and learn there and work there for a couple of years and see how it really works. But when you do have an idea that won't leave you alone and it's bothering you for 6 months and you don't see a solution and you really see an opportunity that wasn't available a year ago, but now technology is right there for you to solve it, then you jump on it and you try to build as quickly as possible and get through those proof points, meaning you get customers to use your product. That's really what you're trying to do with those first steps, is prove that somebody is willing to use it and pay for it with their time and their money. So that's really kind of the decision framework that anybody should use, looking at what they want to work on in the future. Make sure that whatever they're working on has a place in the future, that it's not too early, that it's not still research, but you can actually assemble a product out of
Excuse
it.
Excuse me.
And that you can take it to market and somebody's willing to pay money for it. That's how you build a business.
Wow, amazing. So that's really how we've seen these startups and these companies really, I wouldn't say transform, but just grow into these large organizations because they saw the trends and they came up at the right time. And when you do that, investors are interested and therefore they're willing to pump money into you, if I want to simplify that.
Yeah, I mean, timing, you know, everybody talks about timing, but really what that means is that it's not too early where there's a market for this particular solution. And it's not too late where you're a commodity and there's already 10 huge companies doing what you're trying to do, right? You're never going to beat a big company at their own game. They have a brand, they have a team, they have customers, they have loyalty. You're never going to beat them at their own game. You have to be able to use newly available technology to leverage and build something fundamentally better. That's a no-brainer. That's better by an order of magnitude. And that's how you're going to get customers to switch to your product. Right, and then you have to have kind of a defense mode around that. It could be intellectual property, but more often than not, it's actually just getting to market first with that new solution. So that's really what it's all about.
Okay, awesome. So how do we know in those early days that it's time? Like, what are some how can I say this? Not features. Like, what are some indicators to tell us? Oh yeah, this is doing this, maybe it's time we get involved in this, or it just has to be purely based on you seeing it and then having a passion for it and then building it.
No, listen, I mean, there are plenty of people that are serial entrepreneurs that have figured out how to spot the trend and capitalize on it. So a lot of times, especially new entrepreneurs, will kind of rush into something, but realize that it takes a year to build anything, to build any kind of initial product. It takes another year to get any kind of customer traction. And if you're going to see it all the way through, you know, you're looking at 5 to 8 years of your life. And you can't do that too many times, right? It's non-refundable lifetime. You can always make more money, but you can never make more time. So my recommendation is always to really kind of be sure of what you're jumping into. And there's some validation in the market. You'll see competitors and smart companies and, you know, funding being given to companies that are competing with you. That should be a signal, you know, that that you're on the right track because there are other smart people investing time and money into this particular problem. Now, your task is, of course, to beat them. You can see, again, coming back to some of the mega trends right now, there are probably a dozen very well-funded autonomous driving companies, not to mention all of the major OEMs that are going after this market. So you can tell that somebody is going to win that market in the end. You know, time to time, we have kind of a false start in a market that doesn't really get there. So clean tech never really transpired into a kind of a well-defined market. And there are a few other kind of false starts. But for the most part, you can see that, you know, if there's a lot of money going into a particular category, a particular sector, a lot of smart people working on something, there's probably something to it.
Awesome, awesome. Okay. For those that are starting off their companies fresh or their ideas, What are some of the core fundamentals that you can advise them to build early on?
You know, it's really important to build discipline in yourself and focus on the initial proof points. That means that you probably will not have the resources to build the product, you know, the ultimate product that you have in your mind. But you need to get some proof points and not assume that you know everything, because your customers will teach you that you don't know anything. You need to build something to be able to show to a very narrow audience to get some success, to have guidance from your users or customers to show you with their dollars or time what they're attracted to in your solution, and that will guide you on what should be the next version. So the important thing is to really get out there with the product as soon as possible and have something as narrowly focused as possible. Think of it as a science experiment, right? You want a really, really tightly defined science experiment so you can get really good feedback on it and then take the next step. And that's really how you build a startup, because fundamentally you're working on something that nobody's ever done before. So there is no model to copy. There's no somebody to look for inspiration, because it's not new. Otherwise, if it's already out there, then you don't need to be working on it. So that's the irony. You know, there's no guide, and this is a lot of times why you know, people with MBAs, they have a slight disadvantage, because they're taught to think in certain pre-existing frameworks, and it's hard for them to have this kind of beginner's mind to solve a problem in kind of a novel way that nobody's ever thought of before. So, you know, my recommendations always really focus on a really, really narrow experiment to really prove that out, and then expand from there. So, and that's called land and expand. You land that customer and you expand from there. Narrow the audience, get the second audience, third audience, etc.
Okay, awesome. And let's say we do have an idea and we're trying to put it all together and we see some movement early. How do we then, do we go as individuals and try and raise money early? Do we hold off? When do we know is the right time to sort of to go to invest and say, look, we got this idea, we got this many customers coming through, so on. When do you guys see the right time to sort of say, okay, your business is at a stage where now we can invest in it and it's time for us just to pump some money into it?
Well, so think of raising capital as a necessary evil. Nobody besides bankers likes to do it. I would argue that bankers don't even like to do it, but it needs to be done because you need to fuel the company. And, you know, people have different circumstances. Maybe they've saved up some money and they're able to take a year or two and build this on their own until they feel confident with the product and they have some customer traction where they can go out there and raise money. But maybe, you know, it's a younger team. They don't have savings. Nobody is going to be able to fund them. They need to go to an accelerator, get some, you know, scratch some money together to be able to cover the basics, you know, ramen budget and roof over their head while they're working this problem. You know, it's really important to chase customers, not investors, and really invest most of your time, as much time as possible, into developing your product and then really doing what's necessary to raise capital when the time is right, when you need it. You know, and venture is kind of unique type of business, technology venture, because you have what's called stage financing. That means that with every stage, as you check off more milestones, as you reduce risk for investors, you progressively raise more and more money. So typically you have a good team with an interesting idea in a market that investors like and know and recognize will be growing. That's when you raise seed capital, and it would be just enough money for you to kind of prove that there is a what's called a product market fit, meaning that you found the customer, you know what problem you're solving, who the audience is, etc. As soon as you start showcasing that, and the way you showcase that is you would actually have revenue. Depending on your business model, of course, there's some that just need to do a land grab and just get a lot of users, maybe free users, and at some point they turn on advertising or whatever other advertising or revenue model. But generally, let's say revenue is the indicator. You want to start showing increasingly growing revenue, month-to-month growth by percentage. You want to understand your business on a unit economic business basis, meaning you know how much it costs you to acquire a customer, how long it takes, where you're going to find them, how long it takes for you to pay back that investment, and if you're a profitable, unit profitable business. at that point, if you're in a hot space and you're doing well and you're one of the leading solutions, investors will come to you. Right. So again, you know, if you chase the customers, all the good things will happen. And time to time, you'll find companies. One example is Plenty of Fish. I think Canadian founder, sole founder, never raised any money. The company was profitable from day one. He went out and sold it for $500+ million.
Wow.
So you know, it's not, you know, you're not often going to find that, because if you are in a hot space, you're going to be competing with people that will grow as quickly as possible, and that's the name of the game, because they're trying to take over this newly forming market, and the way to do that is to outspend your competition on advertising and user acquisition and all of that. So it's a fun chase. I cover, you know, a lot of these pieces in the book as well. To take a look at, because it'll walk you through these steps of how to kind of validate your business, and even before that, how to find co-founders, how to build the basics of your team, all those things that will take you to the next level, where you go from idea to a product to a company, right? Where you have an organization, you have revenue, you have customers, etc.
Amazing. So basically, to go through the grind, build your business, and build traction, basically, and investors will a lot of the time see you and hear about you, and the opportunities will come.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're, you know, out of the way where there's not a lot of venture capital, then maybe it's going to take a lot for you to get noticed, let's say. But if you're in Silicon Valley working in a hot space with a bunch of competition, and you are one of the top companies and you're growing really fast, you know, big venture capital firms will have people looking, trying to spot these companies and try to catch them early, because just like, startups want to get the best investors will actually look for the best companies that are growing the fastest, which, you know, if you're lucky, you're going to find yourself with offers from multiple investors that want to team up with you.
Awesome. Since we're chatting a bit about investors, what's the best way to approach them?
Say it again?
Since we're chatting a bit about investors and basically you guys are venture capitalists or investors, what are the best ways to sort of approach you guys or approach investors in general?
So, you know, it's a tough one to answer, because what happens a lot of times is startups will go out there and VC's job is to take the meetings with founders and talk to them. But an average VC will invest in one out of probably 500 companies that they talk to, ultimately.
One out of 500?
One out of 500,
wow.
in Bay Area at least, right?
Yeah.
Because there are a couple of factors. First of all, you're certainly looking for quality in the team, in the product, in the traction. But you're also looking for a theme match, meaning that it's the right stage. You know, if I raise a seed fund, I'm only investing in seed stage companies. And if I'm ready, you know, if I have a big fund, then the company's coming. I want to write a $10 million check or bigger. And that's a much later stage of the company. So the same thing goes even to a greater effect with corporate investors. It's corporate venture. So if you want to, you'll probably see a lot of big corporate names investing in a lot of startups, and there's always a strategic connection there. So it's very difficult. I can tell you from a couple of years of experience inside of corporate venture that it takes a lot to justify an investment and to find that connection within the company. So it's really important to do the homework and not just kind of what's called spray and pray, but really target the right investors, get introductions, warm introductions to them, from people that know you and know them and can vouch for you and say, you know, say good things about you. VCs are busy, take a lot of meetings, and they certainly want a nice qualified one to set it up right. But then, you know, you need to go out there, and it's very time consuming. This is why bankers like us have a job working with later stage companies when they're raising $10, $20, $200 million. It's really a process, right? We'll reach out and we'll talk to 200 different potential investors for a company. So be prepared for that and know that you were doing it for the first time, but they do this all day, every day for many years. So you're not going to win that chess match. just be honest and be prepared to have a lot of conversations to find the right match.
Vitaly, thank you very much. You've been amazing. Great insight, great information for our audience. Before I let you go, where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter, Vitaly G. I'm not super active there. You can find site golem.net, golomb.net. And you can find my book, Accelerated Startup, on Amazon.
We'll put the link in our description. Ladies and gentlemen, Vitaly Golem, thank you very much for joining me on the Business Wilderness.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Business Wilderness, the voice of entrepreneurs.